Do you think it was a good idea to change the plan?
I think it became a nice plan to move.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. I got the message from Rajasekhar, a text message saying that today is Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati is disappearing. It occurred to me also, because it's the year end and the beginning of the year. According to the Indian calculation, he left his body on 31st December. According to Western calculation, he left his body on 1st January. Why is that? Because according to Western calculation, the day begins at midnight. Whereas according to the Indian calculation, the day begins at sunrise. So isn't it rather strange that the day begins at midnight? We call it, even in English we call it daybreak. When the sun rises, we call it daybreak. The day begins. It's a natural consideration that day begins at sunrise. Then why this concept, how this concept develops? The day begins at midnight. You know why? Because the idea was, those days, Greenwich Mean Time was not the standard. The standard was the Indian Mean Time. So when the sun rose in India, it was midnight in London. In midnight in India. That's why they considered the day was beginning at midnight. But actually, the day beginning at sunrise. So, everyone is here, or are you expecting some more devotees to come?
Most of us
are here.
Most of us are here.
Most of you are here. So, since today is Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's disappearance day, we speak about him. Who is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is Prabhupada's teacher. And he is the son of Srila Bhakti Vinoda. Yesterday I was, or it was the day before yesterday, I was discussing about Bhakti Vinoda, how Krishna consciousness movement actually started, the revival of Krishna consciousness movement was started by Srila Bhaktivinoda. Krishna consciousness, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching were practically lost. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it must have been his arrangement that his teaching, he inundated the whole of India, he flooded the whole India with Krishna. And then soon after his disappearance, his dham and his teaching got lost. There was a massive inundation, flood. And Navadvip disappeared. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dham disappeared and his teachings also. How did his teachings disappear? Because different people started to present their ideas in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a very famous personality at least at that time. And they were, in order to get the recognition of their ideas or popularize their ideas, they started to present. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very famous. And they started to say, this is the teaching of Chaitanya. In this way, Mahaprabhu's teachings got lost. Just to give an idea how his teachings degenerated. Like, today we know that Mahaprabhu's teachings are based on four regulative principles. These are the four pillars of dharma. So, these are the four pillars. So, if you want to pursue the life of dharma, then you have to make sure that the four pillars are intact. Dharma is properly situated through your action. Now, in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some unscrupulous people started to present that breaking these four regulative principles is the teaching. They introduced meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. They are called upper sampradaya. Not all are like that, but this is one sampradaya. They have introduced these activities. They are called bowl sampradaya. They have their annual festival in a place called Kendubilla. Kendubilla is a place in northern part of Bengal, which is the Jayadev's birthplace. You know Jayadev? He was a great poet, a great devotee of Krishna, who wrote many books many of his writings, or all his writings actually, are describing or based on Krishna's pastimes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to relish his Gita Govinda. Gita Govinda is a legendary writing. The Gita Govinda, the song of Govinda, very beautiful. This, the Dasavatar Stotram that we sing, Nrisimha Stotram, Nrisimha prayer, Tava Kara Kamala Varena Kamala Adbhuta Shringam Dalita Hiranna Kashipu Tanu Pringam Keshava Dhrita Narahari Deepa Jai Jagadisha. This was Jayadev's writing. This is the Mangalacharan, the introduction of Jayadev's writing Gita Govinda. Gita Govinda is so dear to Lord Jagannath that when somebody was reciting Gita Govinda in Jagannath Puri, one girl was reciting Gita Govinda to hear the recitation, Jagannath left the temple and went to hear the recitation. He didn't go there directly, he was hiding and listening to her recitation of singing. Then the pujaris, when they opened the temple, they found that Jagannath's dress was dirty and there were pricks of their thorns and stuff like that sticking to his dress. So they all were very surprised. Like, the king became very concerned, because the king is actually the custodian of Jagannath. He is the caretaker of. So when the news reached to the king, king was very afraid, very worried, and he started to think that who did that? Somebody contaminated Jagannath's dress in this way. But then Jagannath appeared to the pujari, head pujari, and made him aware what actually happened. Jagannath told him that his dress became like that because he went to hear the recitation of the pujari. Anyway, so Jayadev is a great poet and a great devotee, whom Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also appreciated. And so his birthplace is Kendavilla. And every year, during the winter time, there's a big festival. And in that festival, people just smoke ganja. The festival is famous for smoking. People go there just to smoke. You know what ganja is? Ganja is marijuana and hashish. And I heard at that time these bowls swap their partners. See, this is one culture, the bowl. Anyway, let's not get into that. It's a very unpleasant. Now, can you imagine if things are going on in this way, in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will any cultured, civilized person have any inclination to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teaching? So that was the condition of Bengal at that time. Like, they knew about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's image was so badly tarnished that cultured, civilized, educated Bengali community did not want to have anything to do with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. So, Bhakti Vinod Thakur was the person who actually came to revive Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. He was a very respected person, and he was a very reputed personality. He was the magistrate of the British government at that time. One very important government position. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur started to revive Chaitanya. He is the one who actually got Chaitanya Charitamrita, started to print it, to make people understand what is the real teaching of Chaitanya. I mean, the highest philosophy is presented in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Chaitanya Charitamrita. Are you all convinced about that? How many of you have read, or how many of you are acquainted with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings? Please raise your hand. What is the philosophy that establishes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching? What's it called? Very good. Achinta Bheda Bhed Tattva. Now, what is Achinta Bheda Bhed Tattva? To understand that, let us go back to Shankaracharya. Let's go back even before Shankaracharya, Lord Buddha. Why Krishna? Who is Lord Buddha? Incarnation of Krishna. Why did Krishna come as Lord Buddha? Who remember that I mentioned about Dashavatara Stotram? In Dashavatara Stotram, Buddha's incarnation has been described. What is the description? Who remembers? Did you raise your hand? Yes, sir? You caught cold? The Buddha's appearance has been described as Nindasi Yagga Videraha Shruti Jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashu ghata keshava dhrita buddha sharira jai jagadisha. So this is how different incarnations are being explained. Why the appearance, the purpose of different incarnations has been described. Buddha's incarnation has been described as nindasi jagya viderahaha shruti jana, pointing out the defects that develop due to the pursuing of the Vedic jagya vidhi. What was the defect of jagya vidhi that took place in the age of Kali? In the name of jagya, in the name of sacrifice, people were killing animals. Sadaya hridaya darshita pashu ghatam. Sadaya means very kind and tender heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead became afflicted seeing these animals that were being slaughtered. Animals. Darshita pashu ghatam. Seeing this animal killing. Therefore, Keshava dhrita Keshava, Krishna appeared as Lord Buddha. Now, appearing as Lord Buddha, what did Krishna do? What did Buddha do? Do you remember? Buddha said there is no need to follow the Vedas. The real goal of life, real goal of dharma is 10 principles like Sattang Bada, speak the truth, stay on the path of righteousness and these 10 principles. And he says that the ultimate goal of life is to become nothing. Nirvana. Ultimate goal of life is Nirvana. And Nirvana means to become nothing. Therefore, Buddhism is called voidism. Or nothingness, nihilism, to become nothing. Why did he do that? Because on the pretext of Vedic sacrifice, animals were being killed. So he came to stop the animal sacrifice. To stop animal sacrifice, what did he do? He said there is no need to follow Vedas. He rejected the Vedas. That was the safest way, simplest way to stop the animal sacrifice, and he established the principle of ahimsa. Not adhara, ahimsa. So he did that, and animal sacrifice stopped. Ahimsa has been established all over. But now the consideration is that Vedas are giving the informations about the spiritual reality and the Supreme Personality of God. So if we don't follow the Vedas, then we'll never be able to understand the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, there was a need to re-establish the Vedas. So Buddha rejected the Vedas, then Buddha told Lord Shiva, now you go and establish the Vedas. So who is that? Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya came to re-establish the Vedas. Now see, Buddhists, as it is, do not follow the Vedas. And the whole of India at that time became Buddhist, practically. So how to re-establish the Vedas on this Buddhist culture? Therefore, Shankaracharya took the thread from the Buddhist concept itself. The Buddhas are saying Buddhas are saying that Nirvana is the ultimate goal of life. Right? Nirvana is the ultimate goal of life. And Nirvana means, according to the Buddhists, Nirvana means what? Nirvana means to become nothing. Now Shankaracharya made the point that you are saying that the Nirvana is the ultimate goal and Nirvana means nothing. But this Nirvana is actually a Vedic concept. Nirvana is a Vedic concept. It's in the Vedas. And Nirvana doesn't mean to become nothing, but Nirvana means to become, to merge into Brahman. And in his own way, he pointed out that Brahma is absolute. Brahma is everything. Sarvam Khallidam. Buddhists are saying Brahma is nothing. Shankaracharya says Brahma is everything. But that Brahma is without any form, without any variety, without any quality, and so forth. So now you see, Brahma, if it is absolute, but if it is, doesn't have any form, doesn't have any quality, doesn't have any potency, doesn't have any variety, then what does it mean? Doesn't it indirectly mean that it's also nothing? So in this way, Shankaracharya established the Brahmavad, which is called Kevaladvaitavad, the absolute non-dualism. That is what Shankaracharya is saying. Kevaladvaitavad. So, by doing that, he re-established the Vedas. You see, Buddhists have developed one concept. Now to defeat that concept, if you bring the original concept of personalism of the Vedas, then people will not accept it. Right? The Buddhists will not accept it. They will say, well, that's your idea. Therefore, Shankaracharya took this course of establishing Kevaladvaitavad to defeat the Buddhism, the voidism of Buddhism, or you can say to he established the impersonalism to defeat the voidism of the Buddhism. Now Shankaracharya now re-established the Vedas. Vedas have been re-established. He defeated the Buddhists all over India and established a brilliant personality. Brilliant. And must be, because he is an who is he? He is Lord Shiva. Incarnation of Lord Shiva. Now, the Vedas have been established. But the real essential teachings of the Vedas haven't been established. Vedas, the scriptures have been established. The society has accepted the scripture, but the thing hasn't been established. The essential teachings of Vedas. Therefore, who came in the line? Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya established his theory called Vishishtadvaitavada. Shankaracharya's thing is absolute non-dualism, and Ramanujacharya's consideration is spatial non-dualism. Okay, in simple words it can be explained in this way. Shankaracharya established Kevaladvaitavada. He took some concepts of the Vedas to establish his theory. That ultimately there is no form, no variety, no quality. Ultimately everything is light, Brahma Jyoti. That is what he established. And this variety of this material nature is unreal, is false. So he gave a few examples to establish that point. Like he took some secondary principles of the Vedas, like Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. That is of course Shankaracharya's own statement. Sarvam Khallidam Brahma. Aham Brahmasmi. So these are the few concepts he took and he established his Brahmavad or Nirvisheshvad, which is commonly known as Mayavad. So he established those Mayavad on some principles, like he gave an example that just as a mirage appears to be like water, but there is no water. It's mirage is not water. Mirage gives the impression of water. Or just as one mistakes a rope to be a snake, it's actually rope, but in dark, in semi-darkness, one mistakes the rope to be a snake. So similarly, this material nature is an illusion. It's not there, but it appears to be there. There's no water in the mirage, but it appears that there is water. There's some truth to that. But the point is, Ramanacharya pointed out, fine, there is no water in the mirage. But somewhere the water is there, that's why you are mistaking the mirage to be water. If there was no water, then there was no question of mistaking the mirage to be water. If there was no snake, there was no question of mistaking the rope to be a snake. So the snake must be there. So in this way, he established that the variety of this material nature is a reflected reality, but it is a reflection of the real reality, and in the reflection, since there is variety, there must be variety in the real reality. Right? So in this way, he established the variety, variegatedness of the spiritual reality through his Vishishtadvaita. Right? See what a brilliant personality. Undoubtedly, Shankaracharya was a brilliant person. But Ramanujacharya pointed out the flaws in his presentation. And in this way, Ramanujacharya came and established personalism. Or you can say, before the personalism, the variety and the spiritual reality. Spiritual reality is not just light. Beyond that light, there is variety. Yes, it's a world of light, no doubt about it. Just as this is a world of darkness, the spiritual reality, being diametrically opposed to the material nature, is a world of light. But in that world of light, there is spiritual planets. In those spiritual planets, there are personalities, there are living entities. And there, the predominating factor is the Supreme Personality of God. So in this way, Ramanujacharya established his Vishishtadvaitavada. Then Madhvacharya established his Dvaitavada. And Vishnu Swami did his Dvaitadvaitavada. And in this way, the four Acharyas established their personalistic philosophy. But there is a conflict between Shankaracharya's impersonalism and the Vaishnava's personalism. Right? There was a conflict between personalism and impersonalism. So then came Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? He made a perfect harmony between this impersonalism and personalism. What was the conflict actually? The conflict was that there are three considerations. Vedic philosophy basically deals with three considerations. Jiva, living entities; Ishvara, Supreme Personality of Godhead; and Prakriti, nature, materialism. So, Shankaracharya's point is that ultimately it is all Brahma. Brahma in the mode of goodness is Ishvara. Brahma in the mode of passion is Jiva. right? Matter and energy. Now when a jiva transcends the mode of passion and ignorance and comes to goodness, then he becomes Ishvara. But beyond that, when he transcends the mode of goodness also, then it is Brahma. You see, I mean, quite a brilliant way of presenting. So he did that, as we are saying, like an extremely brilliant person. So ultimately it is Brahma. So what he did is that he made Ishvara, Jiva and Prakriti all subservient to Brahma. Like it's ultimately it's Brahman. Ultimately everything will become that impersonal light, Brahma Jyoti. But all these varieties and everything that we are seeing, and three other considerations that we are seeing, living entity, Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti, they are product of Brahman due to the influence of the gunas of material. But what Ramanujacharya pointed out, that beyond that Brahman is the variety, the spiritual variety. And Ishvara is the supreme, Jiva is his minute parcel, and Prakriti is his external energy. So that is what the Vaishnava philosophy established. But this is the conclusion of the Vaishnava philosophy. But we have a conflict between them, similarity and difference. That is the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya. Achinta. First thing, he is establishing that Achinta. And this concept is from actually Shankaracharya. Achinta khalu je bhava na tans tarkena jyotaye. Prakritibha pare jastu tad achinta sulakshana. That is, Achinta. Chinta means conception, mental concept. Right? Thoughts. The perception of the senses. Achinta. Achinta means beyond our mental perception. The things that are beyond our conception, things that are inconceivable, that cannot be established by argument. It has to be accepted according to the Vedic. The things that I do not know, what's the point in arguing about that when I do not really know it? Therefore, the way to understand it is by taking the knowledge from a higher authority. Isn't it? So that is the thing that he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first considered. Achinta khalu je bhava na tans tarkena jyotaye. That cannot be established by argument. And what is the symptom of achinta? Achinta, the symptom of achinta is prakritibha pare jastu tad achinta shalakshana. The thing that is beyond this material nature, that is the symptom of achinta. What exists beyond this material nature, not only what exists beyond our sight, but what exists entirely beyond this material domain, that is. So, in this way, the first thing is established is Achinta. And then, Bhed and Abhed. Jiva and Ishvara. Right? Jiva is a part and parcel, and Ishvara is the ultimate, absolute. Now both are spiritual, therefore qualitatively both are same. Abhed, both are same, both are spiritual. Jiva is spiritual, Ishvara is spiritual. So there is, qualitatively there is no difference. But quantitatively, there is a difference. Just like you don't say a ray of sun to be the sun. You don't call a drop of water to be water, although both a drop of water is water and ocean is also water. But you don't call, a drop of water to be ocean. And in this way there are various examples that have been established. Another example is, like, the Prakriti now has two aspects. Jara Prakriti and Para Prakriti. Krishna's internal potency and Krishna's external potency. This material nature is Krishna's external potency. And the spiritual world is Krishna's internal potency. One is Krishna's own potency, internal potency, and the other is Krishna's separated energy. It's separate from Krishna. It is Krishna's energy, but it's separate. That's this material. And the living entities are the marginal things. Marginal means living entities can either be in the material nature or they can be in the spiritual nature. So they have the freedom. They can decide where they will be. Therefore, they are in the margin. Marginal. So, now what is the difference between internal potency and external potency? An example can be given in this way, that say the internal potency is fire. Fire is a blazing fire, huge fire. But there is a spark. What is a spark? The spark is a minute fire, tiny fire. Now this tiny fire, the spark, is fire only when it is in contact with fire. Right? When the spark comes out of the fire, then what happens? Can it retain its fiery quality? Although spark is fire, nobody will deny that. Spark is fire, but when the spark comes out of the fire, then is it fire? No. So similarly, we, the living entities, when we are in the internal potency, we retain our spiritual quality. But when we become separated from Krishna, then we lose our spiritual quality. Now what is just next to fire? There is a huge blazing fire. What do you find next to the fire? Huh? The ash. The ash. So when the spark comes out of the fire, where does it fall? It falls on the heap of ash and it becomes ash. So what is next to Krishna's internal potency? Is Krishna's external potency. So when a living entity comes out of Krishna, becomes separated from Krishna, he falls in this external potency on material nature, and loses his spiritual qualities and begins to identify himself with matter. Didn't that happen to us? Originally, we all are spiritual entities. But what is happening? We are identifying ourselves with this body made of matter. So now, the spark has become ash. Now, if the spark wants to become fire again, or become a spark again, what will the spark have to do? Get in contact with the fire. Right? When the spark goes back, that inflammable particle, that is spark, that has become ash now, if it is restored, if it re-establishes relationship with Krishna, then it will become spiritualized. So that is the basic understanding or basic presentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achinta Bhedanta. So in this way, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu perfectly harmonized these two conflicting concepts. Advaitavad and Dvaita. Or rather, impersonalism and personalism. So in this way, Mahaprabhu gave the perfect spiritual understanding, which is the essence of the Vedas. Therefore, we don't have any conflict, we don't have any problem with it. We accept Shankaracharya as our guru. Prabhupada said, he's our acharya. He did. Chaitanya Charitamrita is actually saying that. Chaitanya Charitamrita is saying that Vedashraya Nastikya Bad Bodhira Adhi. Vedna Maniya Bodha Hoila Nastik Vedashraya Nastikya Bad Buddha. Since the Buddhists did not accept the Vedas, they are Gnostic. Gnostic means atheist. Buddhism is actually covered atheist. Because they didn't accept the Vedas, they don't have any concept of God. God himself has come to establish, but he's silent. Actually, that's the thing with Buddha. Buddha himself did not give anything. He gave some principles, do this and don't do it. But about God, he didn't say anything. He's silent. Therefore, the Buddhism does not really deal with or delve with God, concept of God. So, because the Buddhists did not accept the Vedas, therefore, Buddhism is considered to be atheist. Vedna maniya bodha hoilo nastik. And Vedashraya nastikya bad bodha ke adhik. But the atheism that has been established on the foundation of the Vedas, that's even worse than Buddhism. That is, what Shankaracharya presented is even more dangerous than Buddhism because it's on the basis of the Vedas. You see, Buddhism is Gnostic, atheism, because they didn't accept the Vedas. And if you don't accept the, if you don't approach the Vedas, what will be your understanding of God? Supreme Personality of God. Is there any way of finding out? No. Therefore, the way to understand God is, Supreme Personality of God is through the Vedas. So because he did not accept the Vedas, therefore they don't have any concept of God. Therefore it is covered atheism, not direct atheism. They are not denying the existence of God, but they are not, they do not have any understanding. But what Shankaracharya did, he established the Vedas, but what he established through the Vedas is atheism, covered atheism. Therefore Buddhi, Mayavad is considered to be covered Buddha, covered atheism. Mayavad is also covered atheism. Now there is a very nice analogy in this. When you are going to build something, which direction you go? You got to build this house. Do you simply start to build, put the bricks and mortars together? What did you do?
Foundation.
The building will go up there, that direction, but you went that direction. Right? The other direction. Now Shankaracharya did that. He dug the foundation. And on that foundation, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya and Vishnu Swami, these Vaishnava Acharya, built the temple. The temple will go up that way, but it seems that Shankaracharya went the other direction. So that is why we accept Shankaracharya as our acharya. It was needed. On the ground of atheism, the foundation had to go, be dug. And that's what Shankaracharya did. And then the temple came up. Built by the four or our Vaishnava Acharya. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the deity of Radha Krishna. Now you get the complete and perfect picture. So there is no conflict. Through his Achinta Bhedavi Tattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the perfect conclusion of the Vedas. Is it clear now to everyone what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave? And but this understanding, this most elevated spiritual concept, which is the essence of the Vedas, was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predict? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that it would spread all over the world in every town. Which he himself didn't do. That means he reserved the credit for doing that for someone very special. Who is that personality? He reserved that credit for Srila Prabhupada. And in order to make it clear that it is his, the credit should exclusively go to him, not him only, he also got, he sent Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then so these three persons. So, in order to give them, in order to reserve the exclusive credit for them, you know what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made his teaching. If his teaching didn't disappear, if it continued, then what would have happened? Everybody would have said, oh, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who actually. But to make it clear that the credit actually is meant for these three personalities, he actually made this. His teachings disappeared and his dham also disappeared. Then Bhakti Vinod Thakur came and not only revived his teaching, he also revived his dham. Mahaprabhu's dham, Mayapur, was discovered, but Mayapur was lost. It is Bhakti Vinod Thakur who actually discovered and confirmed it through Jagannatha, the greatest Vaishnava of that time. Bhakti Vinod Thakur came and revived Mahaprabhu's teaching and presented it for this world. But now, this has to go out. So that mission was done by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. His most wonderful son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in 1870. As the son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, the magistrate. Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually was the exact expression is, we can say, the caretaker of Jagannath. Jagannath temple was managed by the government. And the government, on from the government side, the person who took care of that was Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Kedarnath. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur prayed to Lord Jagannath that he send a qualified son. Not a qualified son. He prayed to Lord Jagannath that he send an able assistant who would further his mission. And as a result of that, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in Jagannath. He appeared in Jagannath as Bhakti Vinod Thakur. When Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was just a little boy, just after his birth, he was about 6 months old. He was, about six, not even 6 months. Rath Yatra takes place in about the month of July, August. And he was born in February. So March, April, May, June. 4 or 5 months. 4 or 5 months here. Jagannath Rath Yatra was, Rath cart was going from in front of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house. And surprisingly, as the chariot came in front of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house, the chariot stopped. And nothing could move the chariot. Not only the thousands of people are pulling the chariot, but they got the elephants, they got all kinds of things to pull the chariot. The chariot just didn't move. Sometimes it happens with Jagannath. Sometimes Jagannath himself stops to move, and nothing can actually move him. He just, all these powerful pandas, hundreds of them, cannot move. Sometimes the chariot stops. It happened, we find the description in Chaitanya Charitamrita. During King Prataprudra's time, it would happen. But that time what happened? Jagannath stopped to move, chariot stopped. Refused to move. The king made all kinds of arrangements, got the elephants to pull. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went behind the Rath cart and with his head he just pushed the chariot. And the chariot again started. So this is how Jagannath has his pastime. But this pastime was very wonderful. The chariot came and stopped in front of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur's wife, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mother, Bhagavati Devi, she thought, oh, the chariot stopped in front of my house, so let me take the opportunity to take the child and offer him at the feet of Lord Jagannath. So, and she was a very important person. Now, generally, they don't allow anybody to come on to the chariot, excepting some very special person. But she was the wife of the magistrate, who was also the caretaker of the temple, custodian of the temple. So she was allowed to come up on the chariot with the baby. And as she placed the child at the feet of Lord Jagannath, what happened? Jagannath's garland just fell off. Announcing that he is his representative, who is going to establish his glory. And surprisingly, as soon as Bhakti Vinod Thakur's wife came out of the chariot with the chariot started to move. So why did the chariot stop then? Jagannath was waiting to offer his blessing unto his very special devotee, who just appeared according to his plan, according to his desire. This child was extremely brilliant, extremely brilliant. He would hear one thing just once and he'll remember. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also groomed him up in such a wonderful way. When he was just 5 years old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave him Nrisimha Mantra and gave him the Kurma Shila to worship. So he was grooming up his child to grow up to be an exceptional Vaishnava. And the child also was extremely brilliant. And not only he was extremely brilliant, he was an extremely wonderful character. Say once, you see in India the custom is, when the fruits come in the season, then it is offered to the Lord. So in the mango season, the first mango came to the house, the basket of mango has been brought to the house. But this little child, about 5 years old, he just happened to take one mango. For a child, it's nothing unusual. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur just told him that you took the mango without offering to the Lord, before it was offered to the Lord. And this made such a deep impression in the mind of this child, that he took a vow not to take mango. And he stuck to this vow till the end of it. He never took mango. Can you imagine that the 5-year-old child makes a resolution, takes a vow like that, and he stuck to it the whole life. At the age of 7, can you imagine, he was formulating a different type of script called Vikanti. He saw that different scripts are confusing. Sanskrit script, Bengali script, English script. So he wanted to make a script that would be common to all. Does it sound like an ordinary child? When he was 14 years old, he formed a society or a community called the August Assembly. And their objective was to remain brahmachari throughout the life. Lifelong brahmachari. They were supposed to take the vow lifelong. And they took, although they took the vow, most of them, only one succeeded in maintaining his vow. Who is that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He remained a brahmachari. Although he was an extremely brilliant person, but he dropped out from his college. He was admitted in Sanskrit college after his entrance. Those days, the school leaving exams was called entrance exams. What do they call here? No. Like matric in India and high school certificate. School certificate. So he finished his school, high school, and went to study, but he didn't like the university, the college. He used to spend most of his time in the library, not in his classroom. And then eventually he thought it's a waste of time. As you were saying, Satya. Like, going to the college and the university, unless you are taking some specialized education, it's a waste of time. And nowadays, of course, it's not a waste of time. It's a way to get a job. One goes to study, Prabhupada actually pointed out that this education is for what? To get knowledge? This education is for getting a job. Now, do you know who takes a job? Maybe I should say it because you won't feel good about it. Most of you feel bad. Right? Especially those who have a job will feel bad. Anyway, since I started, might as well. My boss is to give you the knowledge whether you like it or not, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. So, it's actually coming from Prabhupada. It's Prabhupada. He was telling us that, actually not us, I happened to be present. Prabhupada was meeting some very important person. His name is Jaidayal Dalmia. This Dalmias, this family is one of the richest families in India. Big industrial family, like Birlas and Tatas. Dalmias are also very well known family. So the main Dalmia is Jaidayal Dalmia. So he came with three of his daughters-in-law and their grandchildren. And at that time, Gurukul, Vrindavan Gurukul just opened. So Prabhupada was telling Jaidayal Dalmia that he should send his children, his grandchildren, to the Gurukul. And he was telling that, you see, today's education is actually for Sudra. This education is Sudra. Because this education is simply to get a job. Now who takes up a job? Does a Brahmana take up a job in its real ashram? Does a Kshatriya take up a job? Does a Vaishya take up a job? Now who is left? So the Sudras who actually take up a job. Who works for others? Others will not work for others. They'll be independent. Brahman is independent, Kshatriya is independent, Vaishya. Vaishya runs his business, Kshatriya rules his kingdom. And Brahmana cultivates his knowledge. Anyway, so, but therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt that this education is useless, so he dropped out. Although he was one of the most brilliant persons of his time. Like you can see, like, at the age of 13 or 14, he got the title of Siddhanta Saraswati. The astrological community of India, astrological society of India, due to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's brilliant presentation of Surya Siddhanta, awarded him the title. Siddhanta Saraswati. Saraswati, who is Saraswati? The goddess of learning. So one who is like the goddess of learning in his conclusion, is Siddhanta Saraswati. And later on he assumed the name. This Siddhanta is what Siddhanta? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. His actual name was Bimala Prasad. And his initiation name was Basha Bhanavi Devi Dvaita Dasa. His initiation was also another brilliant. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who should he take initiation from? Bhaktivinoda Thakur directed him to Jagannath Das Babaji. Now apparently Jagannath Das Babaji, Gaurkishore Das Babaji. Now apparently Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj was illiterate. But, he was Bhaktivinoda, people could recognize him, People always to think that he was illiterate, he was madman. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur recognized him as the greatest of the devotees. So he directed Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So when he went to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he said, look, I can't give you initiation. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj actually didn't give initiation to anyone. He didn't want to give initiation. So he said, look, I'm not giving initiation. So then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur insisted, no, I want to take initiation from you. You have to give me initiation. My father directed me to you. So I don't take initiation from anyone else. He said, then forget about initiation. I'm not giving initiation to anybody. And but then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur persuaded him. No, please give me initiation. And he said, look, you are the greatest scholar and I am illiterate. How can I give you initiation? So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur insisted. So he said, okay, I'll ask Krishna. Jagannatha Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. I'll ask Krishna. So after a few days, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came and asked him, did you ask Krishna? He said, I forgot to ask him. So in this way he went for some time. Then finally Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, look, if you don't give me initiation, then I consider this life to be useless. I'll give up this life. So in this way Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was forced to give him and gave him this, such a beautiful name. Shri Barshobhanavi Devi Daitoda. Barshobhanavi Devi. Barshobhanavi means King Vrishabhanu's daughter. And Daito means lover. So Barshobhanavi Devi Daito means lover of the daughter of Srimati, daughter of King Vrishabhanu. The lover of the daughter of King Vrishabhanu. So who is the daughter of King Vrishabhanu? Srimati Radharani. And who is the lover of Srimati Radharani? And he coronated him as his sultan. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was very, very fond of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. The only disciple. And a Vaishnava, from his external appearance and from his external presentation, external activities, one cannot recognize a Vaishnava. One has to recognize a Vaishnava from his attachment. That is how Bhakti Vinod Thakur recognized Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur he took it upon himself to spread the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The mission that Bhakti Vinod Thakur started, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to continue. So he came to Calcutta to start to preach. He rented a house numbered at Ultodanga Main Road in North Calcutta. Those days, real Calcutta was the North Calcutta. South Calcutta was non-existent. Central and North Calcutta. And there, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established his Gaudiya Math. And there Srila Prabhupada came to Calcutta. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur got the place in 1919. He took sannyas from the picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and came to Calcutta and started his preaching mission. And he preached, he started, like, he created a big sensation at that time. just like Prabhupada, he also preached only for a few years. Prabhupada preached in the West only for 10 years. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started his preaching in, say, 1920. And he preached for 15 years. In 1936, 35 end, 36 beginning, he left the planet. But he established Krishna consciousness movement all over India. There were 164 temples that he established in different parts of India. And he was an extremely brilliant person. And I was told that in his ways he was extremely westernized. He was very westernized. Once he was visiting the king of Koch Bihar. Koch Bihar is one state in North Bengal, Northwest Bengal actually. And the king had an English lady, Scottish lady actually. Scottish or Irish, anyway, whatever. An English lady, British lady, to teach the prince the etiquettes. She was a governess, taking care of the prince, the king of king's son. And her business was to indoctrinate him with the British culture. And she happened to meet Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was visiting the king. He was a young man at that. And she wrote to her family, some people in the family, that here I came across one person, one Indian young man, who never went to England, but his ways are so English. This way we can see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings, English writing. You literally, even an Englishman has to sit with a dictionary to understand his writing. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, once told me that he wrote in that way to make the British who were ruling India at that time. Naturally, they used to look down upon the Indians as no good. So to make them understand, to make them realize that he was superior to them, he wrote in that way. In their own language, he wrote in such a way that it was difficult for them to understand. Right. He was a brilliant writer. Actually, as they say, like father, like son. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was an ideal son of his illustrious father. And he had the vision. He had the implicit faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement that Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over. In every town. Now, if I ask you, I won't ask you to answer me, but I'll ask you to think about it yourself deeply, within yourself. Like if I ask you that how many of you believe that Krishna consciousness movement will spread in every town and village? Just think about whether you have implicit faith. Although it has happened, it did not spread in every town and village, but it has spread all over the world. Now, if seriously consider whether how much faith you have that it will happen in every town and village. Now, just consider about 100 years back, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not have any doubt about it. And that's why he was so emphatically told Prabhupada to go and preach in the West to the English people. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, as early as in 1894, he wrote in his Bhagavat, in a small little book, two books he wrote, Bhagavat and The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya. Those two books were sent to different parts of the world, in the university of different parts of the world. And in that book, he emphatically pointed out that a time will come when all the religions will be perfectly harmonized under the banner of Sri Chaitanya. Consider at a time when India was a British colony. India did not really have its freedom. To predict that such a thing would happen, that these teachings of India, the spiritual culture of India, will spread all over the world and all the religions of this world will be perfectly harmonized under the banner of movement. So in this way we can see that these are a personality with perfect clarity of their vision. They didn't have any doubt that this would happen. But when you go deeper into ourselves, don't you feel some doubt? Will it really happen? Every town and village? But who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said something, will it go in vain? Will it go unfulfilled? So it must. So that is our glorious heritage. This is the most aristocratic spiritual life. Personalities like Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, our father, grandfather, great-grandfather. Right. What a heritage we have inherited. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki Gaur Premanande. So should we have an Pushpanjali to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then we can have an Aarti also. No, you see, I mean, we have to understand that, you know, Bengal was the seat of British culture. Calcutta was the capital of the British. His father was a deputy magistrate. Right? I mean, he grew up in England. He grew up.
I think when you're mentioning about needing a dictionary to read, because a lot of the words that he writes, sophisticated vocabulary, like some of the language.
That means he memorized the entire dictionary. So he had the perfect expression for every situation, and he used, of course, that's another art of writing, is to make it simple. That's the real art of language, is to make it simple. But he made it very complex. Because of that, so that the Britishers, when they read that, they will have respect for the author and take his presentation seriously. That is not just some Tom, Dick and Harry writing. Whereas Bhakti Vinod Thakur's writing, The other day we were discussing about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poetry. He's such a brilliant person. Can you imagine, he wrote Sanskrit poetry? He presented, you know, he made his presentation through Sanskrit poetry, Bengali poetry, English poetry. And we were there, like, when I was telling about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's alas for those brother, Shalagrahi Vaishnava. And such a brilliant poetry. And look at his Sanskrit poetry. Jadi te hari pad saroj sudha rasa pana param hridayam satatam parihitta griham kali bhavamayam bhaja gotra makana pinja vidhum dhana jovan jivan rajya sukham nahi nittam anukshana nasa param taja brahma katha satalam. Ramani jana sanga sukham cha sakhe charame bhayam kuru sam hari naam sudhara sani mattam ke bhaje gotra. And this is Sanskrit. Can you imagine, like, to express oneself in a language, one has to have a considerable command of it. And to write poetry in that language. And what to speak of is Bengali language, which is your mother tongue. Okay. Yes. Okay, let's see how far it's from the topic.
So, in Bhagavad Gita 5.18, it says Vidyavinaya Sampane. So, the sage, she's learned and gentle Brahmana with equal vision to a cow and a dog. And also, in Brahma Samhita, it says that the Paramatma is in an atom, it's called a Paramano, he's inside an atom. So does that mean a devotee should see in an inanimate object with equal vision as well as
Okay. You yourself actually made the point. Like, there's a difference between animate and inanimate. What's the difference between animate and inanimate? Consciousness. Consciousness means feeling, right? Feelings means, you know, like feelings of hurt, feelings of pleasure. So the point is that one should see the Lord in everyone's heart in such a way that he should not inflict pain upon anybody. Well, the inert objects don't feel pain. That's the difference.
Does that mean we all have billions and billions of Paramatmas?
Yeah, wherever there's an atom, it's there. The Lord is there everywhere, yeah. In everything. Andantarastha paramanu jayantarastha. He is situated andantarastha. Anda means universe. The Lord is situated in an universe, as a super soul of the universe, and he is also present in a paramanu or an atom, as the super soul of that. Right? Thank you. Yes?
As we mentioned, the book, and then he saw the social
he had a lot of.
Well, you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's main mission was to establish this movement in India first. Right? And you see, generally, what a young man can do, right, the enthusiasm and drive that a young man has, at an old age, you do not have that. Right? That's why he did not go himself, but his mission was, I mean, he was spreading in India, and he was quite so busy with India, Indian establishment, that he could not go leave India at that time. It wouldn't have been practical for him. Like, first of all, before establishing the movement in India, it would have been useless to go out of India. Right? And when everything has been established in India and it needs to be properly guided and managed, for him to leave India at that time wouldn't have been practical. Therefore, he was asking his young followers to do that. When he told that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada was 26 years old. And somebody actually told me that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was planning to go out of India at some point. He was planning to go out of India. But before that he left the planet. And this is the way. He actually wanted he sent some of his disciples to the West to set up the scene, and then he would have gone. Yeah, that was the idea. But unfortunately, those whom he sent, they couldn't do anything. Hare Krishna. Do you have a question? Okay then, so we can have Pushpanjali and Guru Puja.